Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. This is the Thursday, January the 19th, 2012 edition. This is Michael Norris, and tonight I only have one of our, my lovely co-hosts. We are without Jerry this evening, but we have the very capable Mr. Bobby Simmons with us. What's going on tonight, Bobby?
Hey, Mike. Good evening. I don't know if we're going to be able to muddle through this or not without Jerry.
We'll be fine. Before we go any further, though, I want to, before I forget about this, I made a note to myself to wish a happy birthday to Gene Lavelle, otherwise known as Burhead Bennett. I think he officially has lapped Charlie Smith, passed Charlie Smith today to be the oldest person I know.
Could be. It's real close. It's real close.
Don't kill me when he gets down here in March. But happy birthday to Gene. And my condolences to his wife and family.
Most tolerant woman I know.
She was close with Louise Smith, I'd say.
Yeah, well,
which one puts up with more?
Before we get into the show tonight, something else I wanted to mention, just to everybody that's listening, or if anybody's listening that's going to be in the area, on February the 11th, they're going to have the second annual show out in Villarica, Georgia, and it's called A Nightmare to Remember 2. It's a benefit it's a night to remember Ted Allen, our friend that passed away a couple of years ago, what a card they've got put together this year. I don't really know what all the matches are, but I know I've just a list of talent that's going to be there that night. Bill Dundee is going to be there. Bo James and his lovely wife are going to be there. Ted's partner from when he worked as part as Georgia Power, Jimmy Powell, is going to be there. Billy Starr, who was his partner, is the Nightmares. This is going to be Billy's retirement match. This will be the last night he says he's ever going to wrestle. So we got that coming up there. And also they're going to have a battle royal. And this should be the real interesting part. But they're going to have four generations of referees from Georgia and Tennessee there. Myself, Charlie Smith, Ronnie West, and Scrappy McGowan, and I also understand Mac McMurray may be there. So just a host of names is going to be there, and if anybody's in the area, it might be well worth coming out to visit and seeing a pretty good show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm assuming this is just like last year, the proceeds of this, or at least part of the proceeds of this, will be going to the Gulf Coast Wrestling Reunion's Ted Allen Memorial Sunshine Fund.
That's correct. Last year they raised $2,000 for the Sunshine Fund.
That's right.
If anybody's not familiar with that, what that is that money goes, it's separate from all of the proceeds at the reunion, and that money is used to help finance rooms and accommodations and food for guys from the business that maybe run up on a little hard times and can't afford to come otherwise. So it goes. Everything goes for a good cause, and it's a great night to come out and remember our friend Ted Allen.
Absolutely, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. Just the seeing the five legendary referees all at once.
Yeah, to see if we can actually walk in the ring without blowing up.
Which one of you is going to fight to get in the ring first? my money's on Ron West. Having spent the past 6 months with Ron on the road, I can tell you he's just as full of energy now as he always was.
Oh, yeah, I think so. He's probably in better shape than any of us.
He's got, you know, his health issues. Anybody that's getting to be the age that Ron is, that we all are, but what he lacks in physical prowess, he makes up for in enthusiasm. I have to say, the guy's just he's a wonder. You want to be around? He's a wonder. And it's, you know, Mac, you know, I would love to, I'm hoping Mac makes it down as well, because once a year is not enough to get to see Mac. Mac's fun to be around and always got something cooking.
Oh, yeah.
And this will be Danny Hodge there for the two of them to swap ribs like they did at the Mobile.
I was fixing to say, anybody that can rib Danny Hodge like that and get away with it, it's got to be all right. And, you know, going back, you know, thinking about it, seriously, just talking about the generation thing, you know, if you sit and think about it, Charlie Smith started in the 50s. Ronnie West started in the 60s. I started in the 70s. Mac McMurray started either in the 70s or the 80s. I know Scrappy McGowan started in the 80s. And his son Jeff will probably be there, and he started in the late 90s or the 2000s even. I think probably in the 2000s. I mean, you know, we got a ton of refereeing experience there.
Yes, this is. But I think Mac started. I know he started in Florida. He was with Ron Fuller's personal telephone man, I think.
Yeah.
How that all worked, you know, when Fuller was booking towns down in South Florida for Eddie Graham, Mac met him, I want to say 72, 73, and then when Ron decided to buy out John Kazana in Knoxville in 74, he took Mac with him, and Mac worked in the office. If I'm not mistaken, at one point Mac owned a part of that territory. Had points in the office too, so Mac started probably around the same time you did.
Yeah, could have very well been.
But he's a whole lot older than you are.
Yeah,
he was like 60, I think.
When Charlie Smith started refereeing, the count was one.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well, they used an abacus, didn't they? Did you bother to watch the football last weekend?
I saw about the last 5 minutes of the Saints and the 49ers game.
Well, that's all it was.
That was probably the best 5 minutes.
They could have just done away with all the other quarters and just played the fourth quarter.
It was pretty good there. I watched 5 minutes of the New England game, and then I saw how that was going to go, so I didn't watch much of that. And then on Sunday, I was able to see a little bit of the Ravens and Houston game. But I've reached the point in the season where I'll watch it, but it's only in passing. And in the Super Bowl, I'll record and watch the commercials. I mean, I had a, in 1999, I had the privilege to go to the Super Bowl. And being a football purist as I am and just loving the game and watching it, the Super Bowl, you go if you're a football fan and you get the distinct impression that the National Football League said, you know, we're going to have. Now, the year I was there, Cher sang the national anthem. Kiss did the pregame show. The halftime show was Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Gwen Stefani. No, I'm sorry, not Gwen Stefani. Gloria Estevan and Stevie Wonder. And then after the game, the postgame show was KC and the Sunshine Band. Of course, it was in Miami. And you get the distinct impression that the NFL says, hey, we got all these stars here. You know, 85,000 people have showed up. Yeah, let's give them a football game just as an afterthought. And that's really the way I felt about it. I was very disappointed in the fact that the football wasn't sort of the preeminent thing there. But it is what it is. It's a show, and I think it's more for the sponsors and the TV than it is for the football fan. But
I agree, and watching that last 5 minutes of that Saints San Francisco game, I'm telling you, you were first and foremost in my mind is the way the lead kept switching back and forth. I kept telling myself, this is a work.
Well,
somebody convinced the Saints to do the job, and they get the job. I don't understand
how that team could be so good with a roof over their head and fall apart so bad with a when they take the roof off. But they did it last year too, so I don't know.
And I know you and Jerry are bigger, especially you, football fans than I am, but they kept saying, and I've heard several people mention this season, because this is, to be honest with you, I watched the Saints a handful of times, but that was about it. I watched a couple of Falcons games when I could catch them. But everybody was saying how much the rules have changed for they've just about killed the running game. Explain that to me, because I know there's a lot more in effect to protecting quarterbacks and stuff like that.
Well, if you touch the quarterback and in the referee's mind you hit him too hard, they're going to throw a flag on you for roughing the passer. The defensive side of the ball, you can bump the receivers within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, but after that you can't touch them. And now, as you go down the field, they've started fining the players for what they call hits on defenseless players. If a guy goes up to make a catch over the middle and you clip his legs out from under him and he comes down and lands on his head, they penalize you because they say he was defenseless. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's really, they've swung the rules because they want a lot of scoring. They figure that's the most exciting part of the game. So, I enjoy a passing game, but I'm sort of like Bear Bryant. When you throw the ball, four things can happen, and three of them are bad. So, I don't know. But it's just like that. Like you say, that last 5 minutes when they were moving up and down the field. If they'd been playing in the 50s, somebody would have got to Breeze and took his head off, and that would have ended all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But, yep. They're making money. They're the highest. They're the most watched sport in the world. They constantly make money. When you're talking, money in the National Football League, you're not talking millions. You're talking billions with a B. And just... you can't knock success, so whatever works.
Yep. It's like the wrestling business. It's going to evolve to where it once was. And there's good points in that, too, because there are so many people who, because of the played in the 60s and 70s that, ended up with brain damage or think of all those guys who were breezed through college. Because, they were good football players, and they just knew they were going to have a career. And at the end of their third year of their career, they ended up with a broken neck or something like that.
Yeah.
You don't have a college degree. Well, they've got a degree, but they didn't really learn anything to fall back on. It's just,
You get back into the 50s and 60s where it wasn't monitored that well. You had guys with college degrees that couldn't read. They just pushed them through. It was a football factory, some of those schools. And, it still is to some degree, I imagine. But it's just that's the way things are. It's the way life is.
Yeah, that's true.
I think I've told this on here before. Some of the parties are still alive, so I won't call any names. But in the 70s, when I was running the office for Jim, we paid for a car for a player at the University of Georgia. I made that car payment every month. And it was a lease vehicle, and it was in our name, but he drove it. I never saw it. So he must have took better care of it than the wrestlers did, because I got phone calls from the wrestlers trying to drive Lincoln Continentals down railroad tracks. So you know.
I would imagine there was probably some alcohol involved in that situation.
There was some alcohol or some herbal medication or something. yeah, that was sort of the straw that got me out of the wrestling business. That was one of the things that made me decide I'd had enough. When we started doing the tours up north, we bought their plane tickets. I mean, we did things that were unheard of in the wrestling business. We bought their plane tickets, round trip. We set up, depending on how many guys we sent up there, we set up anywhere from 3 to 6 Lincoln Continental Town Cars so that the guys could ride comfortably. They weren't crammed in little cars, you know. And we had them, and there was never any more than 4 to a car. And in a Lincoln Town Car, 4 to a car, that's like riding in your living room.
Yeah.
We paid for the rental cars. We gave them a per diem on top of what they made for them to eat every day. The only thing we didn't pay for was their hotel. But we gave them money to eat on. We paid them, you know, they were making great money. And we were furnishing the cars, plus we were flying them up there and back. And, man, you wouldn't believe. I got calls every week about cigarette holes in the leather seats of the Lincolns, dents, bangs, booms. And then the one night, and here again, these people are still around. I'm not going to put anybody under the bus. But I get a phone call about two guys, or actually it was three, trying to drive a Lincoln Continental down a railroad track. So, you know, it was just...
Oh, man.
They used to say the rental car company wasn't happy with us, and they got to where they didn't want to give us the cars, and it was getting to be more and more of a hassle. And
I can imagine.
I equate it to running a 24-hour daycare center for adults.
Send them even the adult office question.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
Well, we are going to be joined by a very special guest tonight, somebody who I have been trying to get on the program since last year when he was voted into the WWE Hall of Fame, and finally was able to connect with him yesterday, and he was very enthusiastic about doing the show with us, and this is a guy who... truly a legend in Georgia, but a legend in many other places as well, and that's Bob Armstrong. So I'm going to try and give him a phone call since we know that the switchboard is working now. Bobby and I test them before we're on the air. Hopefully we won't see A5 rolling, and dial Bill Bowman. I think it was the last time I tried to do this.
Hello?
Bob.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Michael Norris, Peace State Pandemonium. How you doing this evening?
Hey, Michael. How you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Also have Bobby Simmons on the line with us. Jerry Oates, unfortunately, had a family commitment this evening, but he said to give you his best and to tell you hello, and he's sorry he's not going to be able to be on the show with us. So.
Well, I'm welcome, sorry about Peace Pandemonium. Yeah, he's a good man. Jerry was a good man. I've traveled with him a lot, wrestled with him a lot, and he's an A-plus guy.
Well, if I'd have thought he'd have talked about me nice like that, I'd have stayed off the phone, too.
Bobby,
how
you
are you?
I'm doing good, my friend. Bobby, do you remember making those tapes for me for those trips in Georgia?
Those were 8-tracks, wasn't they?
They were 8-tracks. It's been that long ago, but I never forgot them because I used them over and over and over again.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed them. Oh, yeah, traveling with Bob was always fun because Bob always had a harmonica or bongos, or there was always stuff in the car to entertain yourself when you was going up down the road.
Yeah, well, that's true. I like to make a little noise, keep myself awake. It sure broke up the monotony of the long trip, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Michael, I'll tell you something Bob turned me on to, and this is really going. I had never. You remember the old song by Carl Douglas, "Kung Fu Fighting"?
Yep.
Bob was the first person I ever knew that actually bought that album. He had it on a tape, and man, there was some great music on that thing.
Yeah, it was. It was wake up music.
Yes, sir. That was good traveling music. You know, and every once in a while he'd throw in one of them chop sounds. That's what, you know, it was good.
Well, Bob, it's been a long time coming. I called you. I had hoped to get you on last summer when you were inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, but I knew that with everything else that you had going on, it was probably going to be hard to connect with you. And when I went on the road with the circus, I kind of threw my plans off on everything with it. It's been a long time coming, but we are certainly glad to have you on the program this evening.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, buddy. I wish you could have made that. That's probably the four most exciting days of my life, and I didn't have to take a fall or a bump or anything else. In fact, I asked Vince McMahon, everybody had a, when I got to the Phillips Arena, is that it now, instead of
yeah.
the Omni? That's
yeah.
I said, now, Vince, everybody's got a name tagged. I need one. He said, just show them that ring. And sure enough, everywhere I went, if they said, well, just a minute, sir, and I'd just hold that thing out, and I guess he'd given them orders. That's all I had to do. They treated me royally, and I really appreciate it, and it was something I thought would never happen to me, so it was four of the most exciting days I've spent probably in many, many, many moons.
Well, you certainly deserve it, because I will say, having the and I'm not trying to be funny or anything about your age, but I saw you a lot of times. Well, I followed you through the magazines and everything, and when you I used to spend my summers in Tampa. And summer that you came in and worked in Tampa and had the program with Buddy Colt over the North American title. I was a kid and I was there, and I had a friend of mine that always went to the matches with me. Was a diehard, you know. He knew everything, and he was. Night, I think you won you beat Colt in Tampa that night for the title, and but he was saying he'd never heard of you. I said, well, you'd be in for a pleasant surprise. Oh, there's no way he's going to beat Buddy. Of course, you know, we were marched back then. Didn't have any clues to.
I beat him in 29 seconds.
I said,
I beat Buddy Colt in 29 seconds. It wasn't much of a wrestling match, but 29 seconds later, I was a North American champion, and I became, you know, popular early in Florida because of that.
Yes, you did. And you, I was going to say, you made a big believer out of him, and he followed you from then on. And what year did you break in, Bob?
It was about 1962. It's been 50 years this past October that I've been in the business.
Wow. Who actually trained you, or how did you get involved in the business?
I only got trained twice. A fellow named Red Dugan. I don't know if Bobby remembers him, but
yes, I do.
He's a promoter in Marietta, and the first time I worked out with him, I broke his arm. So, but I was a weightlifter. I was competing in bench press and squat and all that stuff. And but I just love wrestling. I always wanted to be a wrestler. So he said, "Well, I'm going to give you a try. Come on down. We'll work out in the ring." So I broke his arm. So the next time he had a guy from Canton. And I worked out with him for about 5 minutes, and he stood over in the corner and said, just run and jump and flip on your back. I did that a few times, and that was my training. The rest of it was in the ring, on the job training. The hard way, and that's for sure. But you know the old saying, if you learn it the hard way, you don't forget it.
Right.
That's true. And I will say again, and I'm not saying that just because you're on the program, but you were probably one of the best baby faces I ever saw. You had more fire. You could pop a crowd better than anybody I saw. And surprisingly, I had gotten into the business and gotten out of the business when you decided to work heel for Fuller. And I saw that either on Joe Pedicino's show or taped or something. But
I was amazed
at how effective a heel you were after being a baby face, after the consummate baby face for so many years.
Well, that's usually what happens in our profession. You know, when you're everybody likes you a lot and you do something wrong, they really don't like that. And I really was scared. It got so bad that when I would go to the ring in Mobile, Alabama, they'd send a riot squad down there, 6 guys, to take me to the ring and back. And still, with all that, one night coming back from the ring, I'd wrestled Ken Lucas, who was really a favorite down here in Mobile, Alabama. And I had left him laying. And before I got back, a guy had launched himself from about the third row of the bleachers and got over the policeman right onto my back. And, boy, the fight was on. So that people really hated me, and I hated that because I've always just liked people and liked talking to them and see what they know and see you know, different ideas about the wrestling business. And I really hated it that year, but it turned out to be our most prosperous year.
Let me ask you, did you ever reveal who Fannie Mae Titwine was?
No, but I'll tell you this, another thing about Fannie Mae. The word got around, again, in Mobile, Alabama, which was probably the meanest town I ever wrestled in. The word got around this real heavyset lady sitting on the first row was Fannie Mae Titwiler. And people started grabbing her hair and pulling her hair, and they had to separate her, take her back to the back of the building, calm everybody, and I had to make an announcement. I do not have Fannie Mae Titwiler with me tonight. I am meeting her after the matches. So she came back, and everybody apologized, but that actually happened. They hated Fannie Mae as bad as they did me.
So you missed your opportunity. You should have either gotten Mae Western or Mae Young.
yeah, he's one of those. Well, she'd have whipped them all. Mae Young is the toughest of her, and I guess her and Moolah were probably the toughest lady wrestlers I've ever known.
Mae Western, before Ron came in, when Lee Phil still had the Mobile territory, she had more heat than anybody I ever saw in my life in that building, including Bobby Shane. And somebody even took a shot at her Mobile one night. Like you said, Mobile was a pretty bad town.
Yes, it was.
She was pretty tough with the heat and everything. And
yes, she was. And loved it. And she loved that.
Absolutely.
Bob, when did you actually start working for the Atlanta office for Gunkel? I know you broke in 62, but was it around 66, 67?
No, I'd worked for them the whole time.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I'd worked for them the whole time, and that was when Gunkel and a couple of guys named Bobby, remember them, the McIntyre brothers, Ron and Don McIntyre. And there were a few people that had percentages up there, and so I worked my first match over there in Carrollton, Georgia. I was the Green Shadow. I had mask on, I had boots, I had long pants, I had a long sleeve shirt. You couldn't even see me. I was scared to death, and I got a little bad boy Hines. You guys might remember him. He about made a pretzel out of me. And then my next match was in Marion. I stayed right there, and I was a fireman at the time. So I spent 7 years as a fireman and wrestling for Ray Gunkel of them. Of course, Jim Barnett sold his offices in Australia and bought out everybody in the Atlanta office. I'm sure Bobby remembers that.
Yep.
And so I stayed with him, and anywhere I would go, he would always call me and ask me to come back. Within 6 months, he'd say, we had a love-hate relationship because I was the only one who would talk back to him and really upset him sometime. And so, but he would always call, and I was always glad to come back home. I loved Marietta, Georgia, and I had spent my life there, and so I was always glad to come home.
Did you already know Dale Cochran?
Yeah, the first match I had in Marietta, Georgia, there was a hole in the wall where the clean guys and the bad guys could talk to each other through a hole if they had to. and I saw this eyeball. It's my second match. I'm a nervous wreck. And I saw this eyeball looking at me, and he heard somebody say, "Come here. Come here, get closer." And I got close. He said, "Damn, I thought your arm was an optical illusion." I had about a 20-and-a-half-inch arm at the time. And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You don't have to yes, sir, me. I'm wrestling you tonight." I went, "Oh, God." And Darryl was a big guy and strong as a bull, too. So that's after that, we became great friends and traveled together and made a lot of money together. We got in with Birmingham. Nick Gulas was a promoter at that time, and he liked us as a tag team, you know, two big hunks. And so we got the title over there, and we made a lot of money over in Birmingham with Nick Gulas, and still wrestled for Barnett. And when the big split came, Bobby, remember the big split came. Every wrestler split all from the Atlanta office. But I was the only one that stayed. I felt I ought to. The promoter then was Paul Jones, and he was a good friend of mine, and so I stayed, and they gave me a huge bonus just for doing that. I didn't expect that, and they gave Darryl, who was a fireman and very seldom wrestled at the time, maybe once or twice a month, they gave him the same amount. So he thanked me a lot for that because I named him. They asked me, were there any other wrestlers that had stayed with him? I said, "Yeah, Darryl Cochran, my friend." And so there we went. Of course, I got a good offer from Ann Gunkel, and I loved her to death. She was a sweetheart. And they called me into their new offices, and her office was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. It was all ermine, beautiful, white. Everything was white. It would knock your eyes out. And I had a long talk with her, and she offered me a heck of a payoff. And I just couldn't do it. I was a Marine at 17 years old. I was taught loyalty all my life, fighting for each other and never leave a man behind. And that just tore my heart apart when my friends that I had been wrestling with turned away from the regular promotion. To me, that was very disloyal, but that's a matter of opinion. And so that's how that, mine and Darryl's, and I knew him, and I was a pallbearer at his wedding. I mean, not his wedding, excuse me. I wish it had been his death.
And what year, because I know you guys toured Japan as the Durango Brothers as well.
Yeah, we went to Japan over there. You know, it's a real funny thing you should mention. A funny thing happened at the Hall of Fame. Triple H was walking in front of me and Road Dogg and Scott, and they were all talking. I was just walking behind, you know, sipping my coffee and lifting. And this old Japanese man came out and stood right in front of the three of them. And so they all got posed, and he said, "No, no, 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 please move." And he took my picture and said, "How are you, Mr. Durango?" So Triple H and him said, "Well, good God, I guess we're not over in Japan." That's a funny thing, because I wasn't even paying any attention. I was just trying to avoid everybody. I'm not into all that. But that was the funniest thing that happened. A Road Dogg still kids me about that.
Now, around about the mid-70s, you tied up with the Fullers in Knoxville, and you, again, with your loyalty, you stayed with Ron when you guys opened Mobile.
That's right. You're right. I'd forgotten about that. That's the second time. And my friends all separated, and Don and I and Ron and I had become great friends, and I just couldn't leave him. And I thought eventually everybody was going to get together and have a hell of a fight, and the winner took all. But that didn't happen. We went into a bar one night, Dick Slater and I, and there was Bob Orton Jr. and half that crew over there, and I just waved at him and sit down, and so did Slater, who was a bad dude. If you ever heard anything about Dick Slater, he was a bad dude. And so everybody just nodded heads, understood the situation. Not a blow was thrown. But that was another part. So in fact, I got hired right after that as a booker for Jim Barnett, and had an office up there. But I wasn't an office guy. I did all my stuff from home, talked to guys on the phone, and never that. And I booked that for a while, and then they said they wanted me to come to the office. Jim always liked an office, and I refused, so he hired Louis Tellet and let me go, and I think they lasted about 6 more weeks. And that fell apart completely. And then we bought this down here, and I've been here ever since. I love it down here on the coast.
You certainly, by the time we're on, you guys came in with Southeastern. The Gulf Coast promotion was all but dead, as Bobby can tell you, because he spent a couple weeks down here in 77, and it was just, you know, this territory was on fire for so many years. But
this was a hot spot in the country for a long time. But, you know, the Field brothers who owned this place, they were into automobile racing, too.
Yep.
So when we bought this, I just bought 10% of it, and everybody told me you just bought 10% of nothing because, as you said, it was pretty dead down here. But in 6 months, I made my first dividend, and I told all my sons who were very young then, I said, split this between you and go buy you something nice at the mall. So I was really happy because everybody had told me, even Jim Barnett said, you won't make any money, Bob, for 2 years. You all can get it going in that length of time. But within 6 months, we had started popping it. And then we had a 10-year run down here that I'm very proud of.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know it, Bob, but prior to Ron, with Lee selling out to Ron, he had actually been in talk with, was it 75, 76, Bobby, that Barnett was actually talking about.
Yeah, Barnett, he talked to Barnett. Barnett was looking at buying it.
Uh-huh. And it would have been good for him because TV overlapped. Remember, Bobby, that?
Yep.
It overlapped because when I went to Dothan for the first time, I got a standing ovation, and I thought, well, what the hell? And then when they started, well, we saw you beat so-and-so, and you beat the assassin on TV over there in Columbus and this, that, and the other. And I was, in fact, in Fred Ward's towns, I was a top baby face. He just liked me for some reason. And I had very good luck with him. And Ricky Gibson, I'm sure you remember him.
Yep.
He picked me up at the airport. And I said, oh, these guys and people are going to not know me in this. He said, well, you'll be surprised, Bob. And I was. I was really surprised. And I love this area. When Ron bought it and asked me if I want 10%, I said, where'd I sign?
This territory was strong. It just started dying. And I don't know why. We always had good talent here. But it just started to peter down. But then you guys started it the right way. You came in, you know, you had...
Well, when I was here the first time... Let me tell you this. When I came here for the first time... And I saw a match between one of the Fields brothers, and I cannot think of the other guy's name, but he was a blonde-headed kid, a guy and real popular down here. That's one of the best matches I'd ever seen. I told him when I got back to Atlanta, if you want to see some real wrestling, go down there to Mobile and Dothan and watch those guys wrestle.
And we had the whole fan. I mean, the fans that came out in Mobile to, you know, see Southeastern when Southeastern started up in March of 78, the same ones who had been, you know, had ringside seats for 15, 20 years, you know, they were handed down in people's families. So,
yeah, that's true. I met a lot of people like that. You're right. A lot of people. It was a family.
You did a right mix. You used, you know, you used Leon Baxter, who the pro who people
were familiar
with. You were still using Eddie Sullivan. You know, so there was a mixture of the people that the people were familiar with, but then they were, you know, bringing in
right.
Plus, well, not big names like Jack Briscoe came in and went back before. But you guys had one heck of a crew when you first started up down here.
Oh, yeah. It was great. It just... wasn't drawing any money. In fact, we cut it down to Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It was Panama City, then Dothan, Alabama, and then some spot show that Ron would book somewhere just to get known and see and do the TV. We're doing the TV every Saturday, of course, to get known. And then we started getting bigger and bigger, and then we changed our night to Saturday night. And everybody told us, oh, you've done it now. You won't draw a penny. You're going against the races there in Dothan, you know, the round track racing.
Right.
And, well, within 3 weeks, we sold the Dothan Center, Civic Center out, and that was a great town from then on for 10. We kept this territory for 10 years and made nothing but money and sold it to a guy Bobby probably knows named Woods, and made quite a bit of a cash, you know, payout. He still owes me $600. I'm sorry you brought that up. But he paid, he wrote a check to me for like, I think, $27,000, and he said, the thing was that it was 32 was my cut for 10%. So I saw him at a match in Montgomery. I went up there with my son who was wrestling there. He came over and apologized. And I said, well, I'm glad you're sorry you didn't send me the money, but you're not half as sorry as I am. So that's the way this business has. That's the way it goes, though.
That's very true. That's very true. But the Woods family, I don't know how familiar you were with them, but his father, Charles Woods, was a World War II war hero.
Who was that now? What name?
David Woods, his father, Charles Woods.
Oh, yes, I met him. He was a great guy. Yeah, he owned the channel where we wrestled in Dothan.
Right, right. They owned several media outlets, TV and radio. And
yeah.
Charles Woods ran governor just about every time. You know, there was an election in the 70s, early 70s, he ran. And I think would have made a fine governor, but people could not get over his looks.
Yeah, right. That just turned people off. And after I got to know him, I never even noticed that. But his son didn't quite have the knowledge, I don't think, because he took it. He owned Channel 12 in Montgomery, which is a big TV station there and a very popular TV station. And he thought from that station he could run it, you know, the way he wanted to, and it just didn't happen. A little different animal, as you know. Pro wrestling ain't the same as other businesses.
Not at all. Not at all. But it's like I said, you guys had a great run down. I think when you initially opened up down here, you weren't doing Montgomery and Birmingham. You eventually when
yeah, we opened after we started, and then we had a territory, but we had nothing up north. And
right.
we give Nick Gulas $100,000 for Birmingham. That's when everybody I guess they just said they owned it, and they owned it. And it's, no, now you can run anywhere you want to. But that was his, and we respected the NWA, and that's who we were wrestling for. So we gave him $100,000, and we made that back in a month. It turned out to be our very best town. Dothan couldn't quite seat as many as the city auditorium at Birmingham. So that was a pretty good deal.
Batwell was a much better. I loved working in Batwell. I hated working in that farm center, though. It had a great atmosphere for wrestling. Jerry talks about it all the time. But that dirt floor used to kill me.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You'd take a bump out of the ring and slide for 6 feet.
Yep, and be muddy when you got back to the dressing room.
Bobby can tell you that.
Yep.
I told the Jerry Oates had brought me a pair of boots back from Japan, and I had a brand new ring jacket that Olivia Walker had made me, and I went down there. I started that territory on a Friday night in Dothan. That was my first show, and I got these brand new boots on, brand new ring jacket, and I'm going toward the ring, and I stepped around, and they were having a horse show the next day.
Oh,
they
gosh.
They had tilled up that dirt. When I stepped off the concrete onto that dirt, I sunk up to my knees in dirt.
They had everything there.
Oh.
That building has got a lot of history.
Yes, it
does. It's still there. But I think they're thinking now about tearing it down, or it's condemned now. That building doesn't run anymore, and that's a darn shame.
Hmm.
A lot of things happen.
Well, there was a lot of those. There was a lot of those buildings like that down there. We used to, when I was there, we ran new. We would work in New Brockton, which had the same kind of building.
Same kind, yeah.
There were several of them around there.
Yeah, I remember New Brockton. The first little angle we worked, first we just wrestled on TV to get people to know who and what we were all about and everything, and we were a little different, new talent. And then the first angle we worked on a Saturday night when New Brockton was still on a Saturday night, it sold out immediately. And we said, my God, this what a town this is. You know, the New Brockton, we realized then it was a special little gold mine, not even an hour away, about an hour, you think, Bobby, something like that.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't far at all over there.
Yeah, and my God, we was all tickled to death. That made us some money that night, and we realized then. In fact, I'm wrestling on the 28th in a little town that's in the middle of everything. It's called Geneva, Alabama. It's between Dothan and the town we were just talking about, New Brockton and Bonifay, Florida. It's right in the middle of every larger town, and every time we go there, we sell it out. And I've been doing some TV promotion for it for old Charlie Platt. Remember him, Bob?
Uh-huh, sure do.
I go over there and do that early morning show with him, and it's he doesn't charge me a penny, and the promoter gives me a little extra money for doing it because I got to go at 3:30 at night because he's on early, you know, early show.
Right.
And I did that the last time, and this, we ran it on New Year's Eve night, if you can believe that. Nobody runs on New Year's Eve. And I told the promoter there, he's a lawyer out of Dothan, I said, you know, that's a very bad night. He said, well, we're just going to try it one time. He said, would you do Charlie Platt's show and mention it and talk about it? So Charlie and I got into it and talked about it for an hour and took phone calls from people and this, that, and the other. And it sold out. And so this on the 28th of this month, I got Brad coming down, and he and Steve and I, it's going to be all Armstrong family versus Jimmy Golden, who was a pretty big star down here, and two other local guys. It's you guys, I can't remember their names right now, but they wanted to come right back and see if they could sell it out again, so I'll let you know.
Hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned Jimmy Golden. Everybody talked about, you know, for years about Dick Clark, how somebody who never aged. Jimmy Golden found whatever formula that Dick Clark had, and he drank some of it.
Just
like the first time I saw him 30 years ago.
Yeah, he still looks the same. You look at him, and he almost looks the same. You can tell he's aged just barely, but he was always a great wrestler, and he still is.
Wow.
He still is.
Of course, he's part of that Fields Fuller Welch family.
Right, yeah, they were relatives.
Yeah, for so many years, yeah.
Cousins, that's for sure, cousins. In fact, that was the only guy when we bought this territory. I was the only guy that wasn't blood. I was a little worried, but it turned out to be a good thing.
Well, you're like Bob Kelly. You're Branch Welch.
Yeah, that's Bob, I love
Kelly,
old Bob
Branch.
Kelly. Yeah, Bob Kelly's a gentleman. I met him for the first time. I'd heard so much about him down here being Poppy, and the first time I met him, he was just a genuine gentleman.
Oh, yeah. Bob's a wonderful person. He was definitely. It would go back and forth between him and Lucas as to who had the fans' heart down here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I've heard
that was another
smart
thing you guys brought Ken Lucas back in here and gave him another chance at this territory because these people love Ken.
Oh yeah.
I can't even remember what it was now.
While you're thinking, let me throw one on you here, Michael. We were working one night, and we're sitting in the dressing room, and Bob comes in, and when he comes in, he looks like he's lost his best friend. I mean, he's really worried about something, you know, you could tell. Because Bob was always smiling and outgoing, and this particular night he was just kind of down. He mentioned his boys a minute ago. Now, we're going back to when the boys were little. We were sitting there, and somebody asked him, said, Bob, what's the matter? And he remembered, he looked up, and he went, I'm going to get sued. And they said, well, why? And he said, the boys took the neighbor kid and slammed him in the living room and elbowed him off the coffee table.
Yep. It took a lot of talking and free tickets to Bayfront Auditorium right here in Pensacola to get out of that damn lawsuit. But I'll tell you a lawsuit. If you want to hear about another lawsuit right quick, I'll tell you one that happened to me in Montgomery. There's an Army Air Force base there. It was Navy men right outside the city there on the way to the where they had the big Martin Luther King march. What was that town over
Selma.
There?
Selma. Yeah.
Anyway, he was a big. I was when I was a bad guy, and I had wrestled Ron Fuller and left him laying and bleeding. And I started out of the cage, took about two steps, and I saw a fist coming at me. That looked like a ham hock, and so I ducked and let him have one, and he went back and hit his head on the bottom part of just a fold-up chair and just split his head wide open, knocked him out, and I could hear Ron Fuller from the ring saying, "Get the hell out of here," hollering at the cops, "get him out," because I was fixing to take on his friend. I was fired up, and when we went to court about it, they interviewed his friend, and my lawyer didn't even show up. So I thought, well, I'm going to jail, so, you know, lawsuit, this, that, and the other. And they asked his friend, who was the first witness, "Was your friend in his seat?" And he said, "Oh, no, sir." And he said, "Well, do you think he was going to hit Mr. Armstrong?" He said, "I know he was." And the judge hit them hammer down and said, "That's it, case dismissed. Next case." That's all it took. He wasn't in his seat, and his friend just told the truth. I got my $500 bond back and came home. I've been so lucky, knock on wood, about lawsuits.
Yeah, Michael, you have to get Brad and the boys, when you get them together, you have to get them to tell you the stories about when they were little. When they would have little disagreements as brothers will. Brad said his mom would go out of the room and Bob would move the furniture and said, "Okay, y'all fight." And he said that wasn't the bad part. He said the bad part's when we'd get through fighting, he'd make us kiss each other and tell each other we loved each other.
That's the damn truth.
It must have worked, man, because you got some fine boys, Bob.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, buddy. I guess y'all heard Brian went back up to Vince as an agent.
Good.
And he's back up there. And Scott went back. I got two boys working up there, so I got to visit, you know, with them a lot. And of course, Brad came down, and we were all there together. They presented the ring to me, you know, and that was a real. Steve couldn't be there; he was in rehab. He had got hurt real bad and got hooked up on some pills he couldn't quit taking. But they did a job on him down there in Tampa, and he's drug free, and all of them are now free as a bird. And Brian is really making headway up there, and Triple H really seems to like him. Vince seems to like his new ideas, and so I think I got two boys working for him. In fact, I got to go pick up Scott here in about 25 minutes. He's coming in from Las Vegas, and I think Brian's on the same plane with him. He said if he could get on that, when he's going to get on. They just did their Las Vegas deal on show Friday night.
Okay.
So if you got anything special you want to ask me, I love to talk like this because people ring my bell. They make me. It brings back memories that I'd forgotten that they'll ask me about, and it's a lot of fun doing that.
Well, let me throw one other little instant in to get you just to share your opinion on this. And I was refereeing, and some of the Georgia always had some of the best talent of anywhere in the country. It was always here.
Absolutely.
But there was a time when you were here, and Gary Hart was here, and Jardine was here as the spoiler.
Oh, I know where you're going with it.
Well, the one thing that I know you guys had your differences, but I remember one night in particular, you guys just had a match where we just had people hanging from the rafters, and I had the pleasure of refereeing it. And I remember Jardine in the dressing room said, "Wow, I didn't know you could work like that." And your response to him was, "You never try to work like that."
Yeah.
Jardine was a difficult guy to work with, and
he was different, Bobby. He was great.
He was
great in his own way. And I thought you were talking about in Marietta, Georgia. Once we got in, the first thing he did was punch me right in the nose, and I beat the living hell out of him. He rolled out of the ring and was going back, and and his Jerry Hart was pushing him in, and he was pushing Hart back, and finally he came back to the ring and he said, "Bob, are you ready to work?" I said, "If you are." And we went on and had a hell of a match. I thought you might have been there on that night. We had a hell of a fight.
But yeah, you know, that's the thing. The guy could work, but he tried to muscle everybody he ever got in the ring with. I mean,
yeah.
I know that from refereeing a lot of the matches, but
yeah.
I mean, it was just a different cat.
Yeah, different. You had to, but I caught on to his style, you know, and then we started having terrific matches.
Right.
In fact, after that in Marietta, I think that might have been the first time I wrestled him. After that, we had no problem, and it smoothed out, and we had very good matches from then. I don't know, Bob, if you were working in the office when we had a big meeting.
I was there.
Like you had the best talent, and you know Jardine was there, and Gary Hart, and somebody else, and I think it's Gary Hart that said all the baby faces are jealous of Dusty Rhodes, and I couldn't help it. I jumped up and put my fist nearly through that table, and I said, "That's a blankety blank bleep bleep lie, and if you say it again, and Barnett says, "You gentlemen go ahead and continue this, and I'll talk to you later." And he left the room.
Well, Bob, I know you've only got a couple more minutes, but I got a couple callers in here that I'm sure have a question or two for you, so let me get
on
the line.
Okay.
Call us from area code 912. You're on the air. Go ahead. Hello? All right. Thanks for playing the game. Caller from area code 423. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey guys, Bo James. How's everybody doing?
Hey, Bo James.
Hey, Bo.
I have had many a pleasure of getting to work with Mr. Armstrong and be around him and his boys in my 25 years in wrestling. But I just always say, just as Bobby was saying, there's no better family to work with and be around and share a dressing room with.
Well, Bo, I appreciate you saying that, buddy. You'd be surprised that when you're nice to people, when you get old like I am now, that all comes back to you. Comes back to you, and I appreciate you saying that.
Well, you're very welcome.
Up
here in East Tennessee, the first two names that come out of people's mouth, well, first three, is Whitey Caldwell and then Ron Wright. And then Bob Armstrong is right behind him. I just wanted to ask Bob if he had any memories of working with Whitey or if he was here when Whitey was still alive.
No, I just missed him. They brought me in, actually, and nobody could take his place, but I tried. I did the best I could. And I forget, what's Kazanis? Was that the promoter's name?
John Kazanis.
He wanted to bring me in and made me Mr. America with a mask and all. I said, "No, I'll just come like I am, Bob Armstrong, Atlanta, Georgia, and we'll go from there." And the house just picked up a bit because Daryl and I worked with the Wright brothers. Remember them, his brother Ron and Don.
I see Donnie pretty regularly. He lives about two exits from me.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yep.
And so we started working, and the houses started picking back up. And then when they started Smoky Mountain Wrestling, we had that place drawing 20,000, you know, every time we ran the auditorium up there, the big place, the Civic Center.
Yeah, Fremont.
Yeah,
Knoxville, too, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, I just wanted to check in, say hello to everybody. Hope to see everybody in Mobile here in a few weeks.
Nice talking to you, Bo.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bo.
All right. Thanks,
Bo. See you.
I just want to, we'll definitely have to have you back on because Jerry has regaled us with more than one story concerning you and rubber snakes. So I want to give you the opportunity.
Yeah, I almost killed Harley Race like that one time. a lot of people. I just had a phobia that I couldn't control, and I hated that. And I remember once we were wrestling in America's Georgia. It was 10 miles from the president's house and down there in Plains, and we had a real big crowd, and they just had cardboard set up by the dressing rooms. And this big snake came over, flying over the top into our dressing room, hit right in the middle of everybody. Well, I was on my chair immediately. And Bobby, what was that wrestler's name? In fact, he lives down here now. He was my partner for a long time from Puerto Rico, Roberto.
Roberto Soto.
Yeah. So Roberto laughed at me. He's the only one that didn't. He said, you're funny. You know, they've been laying jokes on you. And he grabbed the snake, and the snake wiggled. And all I got from him was, it's real, it's real. And I tore the back, where I was standing, I tore the back of the wherever we were. And I went, and the crowd thought, Bob has really gotten mad and whipped somebody, and they've knocked him back through that wall, because I fell right out in the middle of the audience, got up, and I didn't stop until I got to the dumpster. And I had to make him come out there, and then it was that damn Buddy Colt that did it. And so that's one story. There's a lot of stories like that.
One I want Bobby to tell, and hopefully you'll remember this, is something Dick Murdoch did to you in the ring.
Oh, the night you were baby facing and you started your comeback and you did your kung fu thing.
Yeah.
And when you struck the pose, he reached out and shook your hand.
Yeah. And the crowd went, yay! Right. Yeah, it was. And I couldn't hardly keep from laughing. And Dusty Rhodes, everybody in the place back there were watching that, because they figured he was going to do something like that. And that was funny. That was the funniest thing that ever happened. But you know how he was. He was just a great guy, a great worker, could do anything. And sometimes he'd tell me, just back up, Bob, I'm going to do a little something here. And I'd back up, and he'd just walk around and throw his head against the turnbuckles, you know. People thought he was nuts, and he was too, and he was nuts. So, but he was an easy man to work with. Yeah, he got me. That was very embarrassing, and I never let that happen again. True story.
Well, Bob, I appreciate your time. I know you've got to go, and like I said, we'll have you on again.
Yeah, let me do it again sometime. And if y'all want to watch a show, that they did that in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas usually puts on a real good show. It'll be showing this Friday night. And they stayed and gambled a little bit. I think Scott said he made $343 to the good.
Good.
Of course, Brian lost about $500. And, anyway, he's my youngest and the wildest, so I will be glad to talk to you guys again when I can have a little more time to talk with you. And I know, Bobby, you can remind me of a lot of things that I don't remember. I'm 72 years old now. Bob, I've got blood pressure perfect for the first time in my life. I only weigh 185 pounds, and I'm quicker than I've ever been in the ring.
Good.
And so far, so I'm going to go till I can't. Lou Thesz went till he was 73, and if I could just do that and just equal what that man did, because he was my very favorite and the classiest man I've ever known in this business.
He was the epitome of what our business should be.
Exactly right. Well, I love you guys, and I appreciate it. And we'll make this again sometime where I can talk a little longer, and Bobby, you can think some more of those stories about me.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, Bob. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a great guy.
Jeez.
What a great guy.
They don't come much better.
No. And I echo what you said. His kids, I was only around Brad when Brad was his first break again. He broke in about the same time I did. And, but, you know, he and I are probably the same age. He may be even older than me, but every time I ever saw him, he called me sir.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that's just some type of...
Way they were raised. The kids, his boys were little. I don't remember how little they were. I mean, they were small. They were stair steps, and the oldest one might have been 7 or 8. I went out to the North Georgia Fair. I played basketball when I was in high school, and I was a fair hand at going to these fairs and carnivals and shooting basketball and winning the stuffed animals. And we went out, me and, as a matter of fact, I think Randy was with me. We went out to the North Georgia Fair, and it was early in the afternoon. It was, they were just opening, and it wasn't very crowded, and I was walking around. And I looked over, and I seen Bob putting his sons up on a pony ride. And I walked up behind him, and I got close enough that I could breathe on his neck. And in a very low, gruff voice, I said, "You don't look as tough as you do on TV in person." And I could see the hair on the back of his neck stand up. And I took about three steps back, hoping, "Please don't turn around and throw a punch till you look." And he turned around and said it was me and started laughing. But, yeah, just a funny guy. He, a great guy. I've never heard anybody say a bad thing about him.
No, not at all. He was, of course, the time I worked before, he was the booker down there. And just treated me, you know, just like I was the biggest star of all the rest of them were. And it was just an absolute joy to work for.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll go ahead and wind it up tonight. We'll cut the show a little bit short.
Okay.
Well, without Jerry, and Les had hoped to call in, but he had a couple of late clients tonight, so he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to. Wanted me to say hello to Bob, and of course I didn't get a chance to do that. We'll have to get him on the show with us again as well. And this is something I should do more than I do, and I can't keep up with the lineup of the other shows that are on the Georgia Wrestling History Network. But last night's show that Les and Mike sent for me, they had Terry Taylor on, and Terry Gage was on probably the majority of the show, and just a great interview. So I encourage anybody that didn't hear it live to go back and listen to the archives on that. And we have several other shows, and I'm sorry if I don't know the order of when we do them. I know there's a show that's done Friday night at midnight, I believe, called Midnight Black Mass with Danny Only, who was also on last night's show. My first opportunity of hearing him, and seems like a bright young man, and has a good future in this business. He keeps doing the things that he says he's doing, and he sounds like he is. Also have on Monday nights, I believe it is, Georgia Now, I think is the name of the program, and I'm sorry I don't have that information in front of me. Of course, the Wednesday night show is Les and Mike Sempervivi. Rich is the producer of that show now, but he's no longer on the air with him. He's got so many other things going on with everything with the site and with work and everything. He's having to take a little bit less a role in the show as far as on air, but their show, I highly recommend it. Listen to it. And of course, us every Thursday night. And we'll toot our horn a little bit. I think we're the best, but, you know, that's a matter of opinion.
Hey. One thing too, Mike, that some of the listeners might, the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com website is sort of crashed on Rich. I haven't talked to him, but the new way to get to it is GWHnews.com.
Right, GWHnews.com.
Yeah,
and he's also there's also a Georgia Wrestling History and a Ringside Rap page, one of each on Facebook. So
Facebook,
there's lots of ways to stay in touch with us. So highly recommend it again. I don't push this enough as I should, but with